The Reserve Pool, Episode 17, Top 10 Thematic Cards. All right, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Dice Masters and Dice Masters accessories. This is Dave.
And this is Evan. Unfortunately, due to technical difficulties, Katie will be absent from the beginning of the podcast.
Yes, but she will show up a little bit later on, won't she?
Yes.
Yes, her internet blew up. Oops. And we're recording the beginning after we recorded the other part, so
yes,
that's a little top secret.
Other technical difficulties that have nothing to do with the internet.
Yeah. Doing a podcast for fun as a hobby, it might be a little more work than my actual work. I mean, like, percentage-wise of time. But anyway, yeah. So, as ever, the whole spiel with Twitter, at the Reserve Pool, our website, you can find the Board Game Geek Guild there, and so forth. We're still looking for some good ways to use that Board Game Geek Guild, so if you have some ideas for us, do let us know. I think sometimes that's just there because it's a neat way to congregate for some things, but yeah, we'll figure it out. We're still young. It's only been a couple of months. Anyways, the first thing we have to get to is a little contest kind of thing that we put out and are a little late in, you know, announcing the results for. So
yeah.
We're going to do that now. Yeah.
Yeah, we might as well get that done. Well, we had four winners, and I have to say, all of these were pretty great. So everyone who submitted an entry, consider yourself a winner. Though, unfortunately, we can only give four people actual cards.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'll actually remind them what the specifics of the contest were, just in case somebody missed it or is new.
The specifics of the contest this time were that we wanted you to give some celebrity, famous person, whatever you want, and we wanted a card of them. What, you know, what would they cost? What would their abilities be? And we are quite pleased with the results.
So, yes.
Reading off, just to get it in the air first, our winners were Randy Romig, J.P. Nod, Stephen Mitchell, and Roger Mickle-Downey. So, congratulations, guys. You'll be getting a copy of Rally.
Hooray.
I'll be contacting you in the near future with questions about how to get you your cards. And, of course, the people who won have to suffer having their cards read on air. So, I'll start with J.P. Nod's entry, which was Stan Lee cameo appearance for 3-Bolt. And Stan Lee has all team affiliations, which I think that pretty much captures how he shows up in all the movies. It usually is a bit part, but, you know, he's in every single one of them. He's everywhere. So, that makes sense
to me. He really is, and it hasn't mattered which branch of the Marvel cinema stuff. I mean, there's the actual Marvel Cinematic Universe that, you know, is the Disney Marvel, but it hasn't mattered so much which branch of Marvel stuff it's been. He's been around. He keeps showing up, and that's pretty cool. I like that everybody's giving him that consideration and really that reverence as the creator of a lot of these, you know, a lot of these characters and a lot of the concepts that we have here. So that one made me chuckle. I like that, JP.
Okay.
All right. So the next one was from Randy Romig. And this was LeBron James, Return of the King, for 5 fist energy. The ability is, if LeBron James is removed from the attack zone before the end of the turn, he may deal 3 damage to the opposing player. And I like this because there aren't a ton of deterrents to somebody using distraction, and I like, you know, kind of, again, that darned if you do, darned if you don't. And his die is, it costs 1 for every level, And it's either a 2-3, a 2-4, or a 2-5. So the justification here from Randy is that LeBron's tack is consistent, is a consistent 2 on all levels. So basically, if he goes in for the short range, if he drives to the basket, he gets 2 points. But if he stays out on the perimeter and gets distraction back or whatever else, he drains a 3. So I think pretty thematically appropriate. And Return of the King, I kind of wonder if Randy is from Cleveland. Randy, I'm from Pittsburgh. That doesn't mean I love you less. Actually, frankly, the crying was getting to be a little too much from up north. I'm glad that something good happened to your town and you got LeBron back.
I know.
Okay, no, to be fair. Wait, go ahead. What?
Oh, I was just going to say, I know enough about basketball to know that, to recognize the name, which probably means he's really famous. So I apologize for having absolutely nothing to say, for having very little to say about this. I do enough about basketball to say that I really like the ability that it seems very thematically appropriate.
Yeah, it works very, very well. And before before everybody from Cleveland tunes out, I actually kind of dig Cleveland. It's not a bad town at all. We were up there, through there for a vacation after we spent some time at Cedar Point. No, Cleveland's all right. Great Lakes Brewery, fantastic. And the restaurant there, wow. West Side Market. So, Cleveland, I still like you, sort of. Anyway, I just didn't want to lose whatever Cleveland audience.
You would even say Cleveland rocks?
I won't go that far, but sure.
Anyway, Stephen Mitchell had the entry Sylvester Stallone Balboa, a seven-fist energy cost character, who, when he's fielded, knock out an opposing character, and whenever he takes damage, he knocks out an opposing character, and that's on his burst face. And he has the global pay fist to deal a damage to target character. So, unsurprisingly, Rocky Balboa is all about punching people. I'm completely surprised.
I'm floored by this. This is a shocking development.
I'm out of...
You're speechless,
boxing
apparently.
Puns. I'm never speechless. I'm just out of boxing puns.
Yeah, this one is basically he's punching you in the face no matter what. That works?
Yep. Yeah, when he comes in, he knocks someone out. If he takes damage, he knocks someone out. And then you can just punch people whenever,
Right.
When you have punches to give, you can give them.
Yes, indeed. All right, so our last winner is Roger McEldowney. Sorry there, Roger. And he actually took some initiative. I'm glad that he won. And Evan, I know you expressed the same here because he took the initiative to actually give us a card. So the card here, we'll post this on the site. George R. R. Martin, everyone is fair game. This is a 7 mask cost here, and I like the use of mask for someone of the authoring prowess and the cunning of George R. R. Martin.
Also, and, he wears glasses.
Yes, he does. So it works. When fielded, all other characters are knocked out. Now, the card, this is George R. R. Martin's face photoshopped onto Doctor Strange, which is really funny. It just looks great, and we'll definitely have this up on the site. But I like it. You make George R. R. Martin essentially the wrath of God, if you think of the old magic card. I don't know if that's still around or relevant, but that was the one where you destroyed, like, everything. The only thing that could have been better is if it was something like your opponent has to tell you which of their characters is their favorite, and then they can't use that character for the remainder of the evening. Or something like that, like truly killing another character that somebody likes a whole lot, because that's certainly what he does. But this is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I would make further jokes, but I respect the no spoilers policy.
Thank you, because I'm actually only in the middle of book 3. I haven't really watched the show.
Oh man, I'm really glad I didn't say anything then, because I totally would have done something that was a huge spoiler for the end of book 3.
I know what happens. Unfortunately, I know what happens.
Oh.
But, yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised. I just kind of figure that if there's somebody and I'm even tangentially interested in them, they're probably going to die.
Why Bran is still alive.
God, I'm in the midst of a Bran chapter right now, and I'm I'm probably not too different from others in that I probably follow Daenerys and Jon Snow the most. I'm the most interested in what's happening above the wall. And obviously I want to see what happens with the dragons and all that junk. But a couple other cards that were fantastic here and I wish could have won. I like the Sean Bean here, where the ability is, and this was Jeff Wolf, when Sean Bean is attacking or blocking after damage is dealt, knock out Sean Bean. Sort of a little play on how if Sean Bean's in a movie, he probably dies.
Yep. Or a TV show.
Or TV show. Indeed, yes. Well, and the other one is Taylor Swift, six mask. When Taylor Swift attacks, you may assign an opposing male character to block her. At the end of that, at the end of the turn, send that character to the used pile. And then the burst face, this is what really clinches this one for me.
Yeah,
also,
definitely.
Write a song about him. It's pretty much what she's doing. Dated this guy, creepily stalked him, now I'm writing songs. That's, yeah.
Yep.
Well, a lot of great entries. I'm happy we went with this one. This was a good theme for the contest.
Yeah, and people keep on the lookout, as there'll probably be more contests coming down the line.
Absolutely. What will those be like? I don't know, and we can't tell you, but we will tell you, you know, eventually. Yes. So on the other half of our show, we are going to be talking about our favorite cards that match up with the theme and that of like that hero. And the cool thing is that there were several characters who were made up for this contest that I think we probably could have discussed with the thematic, you know, or top 10 thematic things. So that makes it a good segue.
Yep.
All right. So let's flip to it and we'll see you on the other side with Katie. Yep.
With Katie. Yes.
So for our feature topic today, we are going to do our top 10 favorite thematic characters. By way of explaining, we're looking at which characters, you know, and their abilities and everything in Dice Masters really just exude like what the actual hero does in quote unquote real life, even though it's really comic life. So what abilities, what really just works really, really well. So we have each come up with our own personal top 10 lists, and we're going to go through and share what each of our number 10s are, our number 9s are, and then if somebody has something a little higher up on somebody else's list, then we will wait until that person, you know, gets to that point until we actually have the discussion about that one. So, Katie, Evan, you ready to go for this?
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, here we go with our first ever top 10 list. So, for my number 10, actually, it's a little higher up on Katie's list, so we will pass through until that moment.
Okay. For my number 10, it was Magneto, former comrade, and he's the one who gets +2/+2 when engaged with an X-Men character. I think it's relatively self-explanatory. You know, he's always been very focused towards the X-Men, so it only makes sense that he would be a little more aggressive towards those of his former allies.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. He was... I almost picked him. Actually, he didn't quite make my honorable mentions, but he was probably like my number like 17 or 18. But I did like it just because it mentioned the X-Men. Though, I don't know, I never thought of Magneto... I wanted to see something more about his magnetism, and I don't think we really got that so much with the cards that that we have with him. And that was what kept him off. That was, I was so close because of the X-Men thing.
Yeah, but. I do wonder how you would kind of try to work with that in the thematic. We might see some more out of them for the Uncanny version where he's going to be in the starter kit. So it's entirely possible that he'll maybe... focus more on the magnetism next time? I don't know.
I actually have an idea for that. I'd like to see where so many of the characters have things where they're like metallic, like Colossus or Wolverine, or other certain things about them. I'd like to see maybe some sort of attributes, you know, that goes a little beyond the faction. So where Magneto could do something, the characters, you have that metallic attribute. And certainly there would be a lot of other, you know, like a shapeshifter attribute or something like that. There'd be a lot of different things that you could have there. But, you know, like a stone skin for, like, Thing and his ilk, things like that. And that would be my way of solving it. So, WizKids, you're listening? I think this would be a lot of fun. Or it could make things way too complicated.
I think it would actually be really cool if there was something that, like, looked at the color of the dye. Like, not in, like, a magic, like, this is a blue dye, but, like, you know, Wolverine's dye is yellow. And if someone just had a power that's like, this prevents all yellow dice from attacking.
Green Lantern. Like Green Lantern should do that in DC.
Dave, you don't. I was going to say it.
Sorry.
Cannot block yellow dice.
I'm the DC guy. Shush.
Cannot block yellow dice.
Oh my gosh. They could have so much fun with the Chromatic Lantern cores in DC. Even though I only really care for green and yellow. The other ones are like a little much. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go on.
I think I'm done. So, Evan, what do you have for your number 10?
I had Angel High Ground for my number 10. I just like the idea that, you know, Angel... I'll be honest, I'm not super familiar with Angel, aside from the fact that he was brainwashed into working with Apocalypse for a while, and he flies, and that's pretty much all I know about him. And I'm not really sure there's a lot else to him.
That's one of his major features, yes.
Yeah, that he flies. So High Ground is all about, like, if you're a little dude, he just flies over you and you don't matter. And I just found that, you know, pretty thematically good.
I think it fits, yeah.
Definitely. More so than, I think, like, Soaring, which is, he's not blockable if you use an action. It's like, if there's glitter going on in the background, then he can fly over you. But yeah, I think this did a much better job.
Yeah, that's not thematic. That's just cool.
Cool and useful.
All right, number 9. My number 9 was Hulk Green Goliath, and this is the one where while Hulk is active, whenever either you or Hulk takes damage, he deals 2 damage to each opposing character, no matter how many Hulks are fielded. I see this as like the, you know, quintessential Hulk smash. For one, you're hitting him, so he's going to get angrier and angrier. And what he just does is he goes ape on everybody. It's not just one character that gets 2 damage. It is everybody. And I guess it's also a sympathetic Hulk because it happens whenever you're damaged as well. So he cares about you. So that shows maybe the human side of this big green fellow. But yeah, to me, this is the quintessential Hulk smash. And he doesn't just, you know, it's the wide damage to everybody that really sealed the deal for me. And that's why he's my number 9.
Yeah, I do agree that that one's definitely has, of the Hulks, probably one of the most emblematic of what it means to be Hulk.
Yeah, yes. I actually felt there are a couple of Hulks that do pretty good by him. But this was the other one. This is the one I didn't pick.
Yes, you have some different thoughts on that, and I think we're going to hear about that in a little while. So
yes.
Yeah, but that's it. Hulk Green Goliath, number 9.
For my number 9, I picked Spider-Man Tiger. That is the one that allows you to pay a fist to prevent Spider-Man from being affected by an ability or game effect. And I think that just really goes towards the, like, Peter Parker's kind of lucky but totally unlucky sort of persona that he has. Depending on who's writing him at the time. But I just thought that one sort of summed up the fact that sometimes the rules don't apply to Spider-Man and sometimes the rules come down on him really hard.
Yep.
I actually had, I think it was Webslinger is my number 14, and that's one where you can force every character to block him. And I thought of the fantastic Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis game Maximum Carnage, where you could use the web very much like Scorpion in Mortal Kombat to pull the guy over to you. And I just thought of him like slinging those webs out and bringing everybody to him. But Tiger certainly does well by Spider-Man too.
Yep.
That sure was a thing.
Go ahead, Evan.
Reading. My number 9 was Cap.
Oh, wait.
Oh, was someone who is going to be covered by someone else later because they had them hired up. Hired up. Possibly also hired up. I don't know.
Potentially. We will see. All right. So then we're into number 8. And my number 8 was Hawkeye Robin Hood. I struggled between him and Longbow, but Robin Hood is the one where he essentially has first strike. He deals his damage first. And I think that while Longbow kind of gives the idea of the sniper aspect to him, I think that the fact that he has first strike kind of deals with the quick draw and the accuracy. So I thought that did the best by Robin Hood, even if it's maybe not the most used iteration of him. Oh, sorry, did the best by Hawkeye, even if this isn't the most used iteration of him.
Yeah, I mean, and I do think the fact for all Longbow is actually a really good version of him, Robin Hood is not too shabby. And I've definitely used him to good effect in, you know, a way that, you know, if you take care of all of your assassin needs with someone else, like Storm or Punisher or so forth, Robin Hood is a really good choice because he's the only character with first strike. And first strike is cool, especially since...
We still don't understand how it works quite well.
but mostly just because the stats in this, they top out pretty much at 8. There's 1 or 2 9s. So the fact that Hawkeye tops out at 4 is makes him pretty beefy and means that he's going to take care of most defenders,
yep.
Especially if somebody is just kind of weenie blocking him.
Yeah, definitely. And thematically, again, it speaks to his quick draw nature, his almost inhuman accuracy and so forth. So yeah, number 8, Hawkeye, Robin Hood.
All right. My number 8 was Wolverine, formerly Weapon 10, which is the one that when he attacks alone, he gets +4/+4. And I thought for me that just sort of sums up the like scrappery, your aggressive loner character that is Wolverine, at least before he replaced Charles Xavier as the headmaster of the Jean Grey Institute, which isn't exactly loner. I always love the fact that Marvel's like, he's a loner, but he runs all of the mutant community.
And it's so in every comic ever.
Every comic ever, yes. So as much as I occasionally am down on Wolverine, his card was very thematic.
It's true. I had a hard time with Wolverine. I thought about putting him on my list, but then I'm looking. I couldn't actually decide which one. If you look down on my honorable mentions, I have Wolverine, all of them, because everything triggers when he's attacking alone. So I'm with you here. Definitely a good pick.
Yep.
My number 8 was, to probably no one's surprise, Green Goblin Norman Osborn.
No,
I believe I've said is my favorite card. But I also think it's thematically appropriate because I know there was a period in the comics, the Dark Reign arc, where Norman Osborn was head of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while or something like that.
He was head of Hammer.
Whatever. S.H.I.E.L.D.'s carbon copy clone. And basically got to sort of run the country somewhat. And it seemed like, I know in all the media that sort of shows that time, it's just he's like throwing flunkies at people.
Yes.
And that's literally what Nog is all about. You pull out some flunkies to do what you need, and then you literally throw them at people to deal damage to them.
Yep. No, it's very true. I mean... especially during the Dark Reign arc, Norman Osborn was all about having surrounded himself with all these little guys and really, you know, making himself the leader of this army of...
Mooks.
Mooks, yes, very true.
Yeah, man, you should be able to call sidekicks mooks if you're running mostly villains.
Excellent. Maybe, you know, with not having access to Magneto as much during draft for Uncanny, we'll see some more villain decks. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah, I'm really. I mentioned in my Doctor Doom article. I think Victor is going to be huge come UXM.
Okay, so that brings us to number 7. And my number 7 is Dr. Octopus, Mad Scientist. This is the one where, when he is blocked by more than one character, he deals his full attack value and damage to each character blocking him instead of having to split it. What more can you say for a character who has gigantic metal arms, yes. multiple of them coming off. If there's anybody who's going to be able to, like, hit you just as hard if there are one of you in front of him or eight, it's probably going to be Dr. Octopus. So, yeah. Doc Ock, mad scientist.
Totally agree with that one.
Not sure what that has to do with being a mad scientist, but whatever.
Well,
Doc Ock, many arms.
Yeah.
Fully only a mad scientist would give himself that many arms. I mean,
it's true.
Yep.
He's a well armed man.
Fully armed.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, that would have been a much better subtitle for that Doc Ock. But.
That's true. I guess the only thing that's missing is the subtitle. I hadn't considered that. Good call. Yep.
Yeah, so my number seven was Gambit Le Diable Blanc. And that's his uncommon version. When fielded, draw and roll two dice and field the rolled ones for free if they roll as a character face. And for me, that one just quintessential gambling. Just because you're talking about... I always feel like all of the Gambit cards in general, it's such a gamble because you pull out these dice when they're not allowed to be re-rolled. You can only roll them once. So the idea of being able to have these character dice and you roll them and they will maybe be fielded for free or maybe... you know, be totally swept to the used pile, and you could really shoot yourself in the foot, or you could really get out some of those really higher fielding cost characters on the cheap. So I don't think anything really says gambling quite like that version.
Yeah, I like Gambit, but I like a different one a little bit better, and we'll talk about that later. I think Evan did too. So
yes, I in fact liked it as much as Dave did.
Yes. So we'll see that later in the podcast.
Yes, indeed. Alrighty.
My number seven, as I actually just mentioned him a few minutes ago, was Dr. Doom Victor. I think this works on a couple of directions. It's, you know, it's all about his power. Like, everybody else get out and except you. You know, he's all Doom, I think, is very defined by his rivalry with Reed Richards. So a card that literally lets you say, okay, everybody but Doom and this other guy and, you know, this other supervillain he's pulled in to, you know, help make sure Mr. Fantastic goes down this time. And then your opponent just gets that one guy. So I thought that was pretty good for Dr. Doom.
Yeah, I think that one makes sense. He is so focused on Reed, largely because he only shows up in Fantastic Four comics with any regularity. And I feel like him being able to sort of focus and like make the board a little simpler seems pretty Doomish.
Yep.
Doom.
Oh, right. So number six for me is Deadpool's Assassin. And really, I probably could have picked any of Deadpool's here. I picked Assassin because it's sort of the simplest, the most pure. This is when Deadpool attacks, you may sign an opposing character to block him. All of his cards are variation on that theme. But again, this is the simplest. What I like about this one is it's the taunt. And what is Deadpool but somebody? I mean, he breaks the fourth wall consistently. That's, you know,
that's
I think part
thing.
Of yeah, that's his thing. That's why he is a favorite of everybody. The assassin piece of it as well. I think the subtitle just worked very well for Deadpool and who he is and what he does. And so yeah, number six, Deadpool Assassin. I think it's not the most complicated expression of theme that we have in this game, but I think it fits Deadpool very, very well.
I'd almost disagree. I honestly wound up not picking any of the Deadpools, partially because I don't think Deadpool is necessarily defined quite as much by his like assassin-y nature, which is really what a lot of those picked, as so much as, you know, he's usually referred to as the merc with the mouth. He's all about the trash talking and just the weird stuff that comes out of his mouth, and I don't really think the cards captured that aspect of him very well.
Well, I think they did it the best way they could with the taunt. You know what I mean? And that's the essentially what his ability is Taunt, which is, of course, a reference to an old Magic the Gathering card
right. That
forces, you know, a blocker. And I think that, you know, the best way you can express that theme, and I mean, if you have a different idea, I really want to hear it, because I love, obviously, we love made-up cards. We just did a whole contest about them. you know, forcing, basically taking control away from your character. It's like control outside of the game. You know, whereas Spider-Man might make multiple people block him because he's got his web to pull them towards him. Deadpool's going to do it just because he said so.
I guess that's fair.
But that's just, I don't know, that's just me. And the assassin piece of it, I mean, yeah, he's more of a mercenary, but he's also a bit of an anti-hero. He's going to take things into his own hands, and I mean, he is very, you know, he's very well armed. He's got the swords, he's got the guns, he's got it all. I mean, he's going to get you if he wants to.
But not as well armed as Dr. Octopus.
No.
Fully armed, by the way, is the title of one of his other versions.
Yes, I just didn't like the ability.
I don't know.
So, yeah. All right. So,
I'm glad
Deadpool.
They did use the pun.
Yes, me too. It's a good pun.
All right. So my number six was Loki Illusionist, and this is the one where Wenfield would take control of an opposing character, and at the end of the turn, knock it out, and it deals its damage to your opponent. And I don't think there's anything more Loki than that. I mean, obviously, people enjoy Gemkeeper a little more for his cheapness and control values, but on a thematic level, turning allies against each other is kind of Loki's theme.
Yep.
You know,
it is a thing he does.
Yes. Sounds like something a trickster god would do.
Really? Really?
Yes.
Trickster god? Tricking people?
I
Sounds
know.
Weird. So, yeah, I really felt that the illusionist version of Loki was really all about his theme of, you know, turning people against each other.
Good call.
Yeah. Okay, my number six was Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme, who's all about pulling out spells, you know. Doctor Strange is the Sorcerer Supreme, so it makes sense he'd be able to have access to lots and lots of spells, which, if you think about it, even though a lot of the basic actions have absolutely nothing to do with magic, that's kind of what they are. They are the spell equivalent for Marvel Dice Masters, so I thought that was pretty thematically appropriate.
Yeah, I do think most of Strange's variants are fairly thematic. I feel his... you know, the ones that, you know, they let you buy them for free, they let you find them for free, and they let you, you know, do damage for free, you know. So all of those together kind of really, you know, are emblematic of that spell slinging aspect.
Yeah, I hadn't considered the comparison between basic actions and spells until you just brought it up, Evan, but that's a really good point. I like that. Good pick.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, number five. We are in the top half of the list now, and my number five is Captain America, Sentinel of Liberty. I went back and forth between a lot of them, but I settled on this one. A lot of the Captain Americas, that is. Captain's America, perhaps. But anyway, while Captain America is active, your sidekick characters get +2 attack, and your opponent's sidekick characters cost 1 extra energy to field. Captain America was... I mean, basically what created not just as a super soldier, but also as a rallying point. So the fact that this version of the card both inspires the rank and file around him, right? Gives the sidekicks +2 attack. He also strikes fear in the hearts of those flunkies who are on the other side of the board by making them cost more to field. In a sense, they need to be convinced to go up against him. Exactly. I think that is fantastic. And for all the sidekick stuff that Captain America does, and I got to say, my top five, I could have put any of these as my number one. I just want to say this. It was like, this is really one A, B, C, D, etc. My top five here. I love this one. I think it just works so very, very well for what Captain America does. Truly, in this form, he is the Sentinel of Liberty. I want to pledge allegiance right now.
All right. So my number five actually found its way onto both Dave and Evan's list, and both of them put it higher than mine, so we will talk about it when we get to them.
Yep. My number five was Hulk Anger Issues, which I just thought was, you know, Hulk, one of his things is the angrier he gets, the tougher he gets, and when Hulk takes damage, when Hulk Anger Issues takes damage, he gets bigger. You're making him angry, he gets stronger, he beats in your face. That seemed, you know, just as thematic as Green Goliath, but in a slightly different direction. Both are very true to the character.
If it's stacked, then I would have picked that one.
I would have seen that, and I honestly am not sure why they didn't do that, just because I think once you go, you know, when you're already that big, I don't really think it matters getting that much bigger, and he's expensive enough that it probably would have been fine, but I could see why they're doing it, just because they don't want, you know, people dancing around, throwing sidekicks with Nog at Hulk, so that he's like 15-15 and then just smooshes your opponent with through a car. But, yes, you know, that's enough moving parts that I can see someone being rewarded for dancing around the Hulk maple.
I think they could have made it like +1/+1, but had it build up a little more. That was, I was between that one and the one that I did pick as my number 9, Green Goliath. And honestly, the only thing that sealed the deal is that it didn't stack. Because what I wanted to see was a Hulk who got, as his health was lower, he got bulkier and bulkier and bulkier. And actually, WizKids did a great job on at least a couple of his clicks figures. His dial, like, he does increase in his attack potential as you click down his dial. And I think almost every iteration of Hulk. So I was glad to see that they carried that strong theme over to almost all of his cards.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think that's the important part of Hulk is that whole, you know, damage equals more attack. I mean, it's just a huge part of his character.
Yeah.
Okay. My number four is Mystique. Could be anyone. And actually, Evan, this is also your number four, it looks like. So let's both... We'll both talk about it here. This is at the beginning of your turn. Choose an opposing fielded character. Each of your Mystique dice copies the stats on that character's die until your next turn. This made the most sense to me because she copies the character, but not their latent abilities. You know, I think of, let's look at the cinematic world here. In the first X-Men movie, right, she briefly is Wolverine. And she can make the claws come out, but they're not really anything more than just an appearance of those claws. So the ones that make her take over the abilities did not make as much sense to me. This one, because basically she looks like the character but can't actually do what they do, I think that's the strongest version of Mystique for me. How about you, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much ditto. I didn't think it... Yeah, she doesn't get to copy abilities so much as just appearances. So it didn't make sense for her to pick up abilities, but being able to say, I want to be this one, I want to be this one, as opposed to, you know, people who she's up against right now, that I think that sort of, you know, perfectly copies her intent.
I really do. And, you know, maybe in that sense in the game, you know, in the game, she might not be the most useful for that reason, but I've heard a lot of people talking about pairing her with Dr. Doom. Is that Reed Richards' rival that gives the minus to sidekicks? Yeah. Pairing her, so you copy a character, and she's immediately +1/+1 above them because she's a villain, and so would not be affected by... Because she doesn't copy the affiliation, of course. So then right there, you have her one up on the other people. So that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah. No, I mean... Mystique, I did not put her on my list, and it's, you know, it wasn't because it was bad or it was non-thematic. I think it was just one of those things where, I don't know, I didn't I didn't really super love any of hers, but I think of all of them, Could Be Anyone is the most in keeping with her power set, and I do think the fact that she doesn't copy powers is a huge part of why that is more thematic than the ones that copy abilities.
Yes. All right, so that does it for myself and Evan. How about you, Katie?
For me, I actually picked one of the new cards that we have seen spoiled in some of the pictures that we've seen coming out of Gen Con and San Diego Comic-Con, and that is Kitty Pryde Shadowcat. It's one of the cards that we're going to be seeing in her starter, and it also, if Kitty Pryde attacks during her first turn when she's fielded, she's unblockable. And there's also a global on there that allows you to keep people from attacking. But I feel like the idea of, you know, when Kitty comes in, like, kind of phased and ready to go, you know, she's able to avoid people noticing her, and she can really slip in for that little quick attack. I don't want to say first strike, because that's like a magic thing. But, yeah, just being able to get in there in that first turn she's fielded and do some damage real quick just seems really kitty.
Yeah, and this was my number 10, and that's exactly why. I mean, essentially, if she's unblockable, too, she's going to go through, and then she's going to go to used pal. So she's really going to slide, like, slip right in and right out of the field of play. And, as you say, that just seems very Kitty Pryde to me.
Yep, I agree.
Yep.
Yeah, good pick. All right, we are on our number 3. And my number 3 is actually higher on Evan's list, and Katie had this there too, on as her number 5. So,
Clearly, we agree this card is very thematic, but you won't get to find out what it is until later.
We can't touch upon it right now, but perhaps we will later. All right, go ahead. Number 3, Katie.
All right, my number 3, I picked Storm, Goddess of the Plains, and that is the one where when Storm attacks, you re-roll everyone, and then anything that gets rolled rolled as a character stays, and anything that gets rolled as energy goes to the prep area. And I think that whole kind of, I mean, all of Storm's versions do something similar to this, but the idea of just like kind of sweeping across the entire field and leaving, you know, things upturned in her wake seems to me to be the most thematic of the storms.
Yeah, can't argue.
Yeah, no, that she didn't quite make my list because I thought other characters were overall a bit more thematic, but yeah, I can't argue with that.
Yeah,
this was like my number 12-ish, because I actually did rank them. This was a difficult list to make, and we'll talk about that at the end here, but I ranked them all, like, after I picked out my finalists, and she just didn't quite make it. But yeah, very thematic. She just blows everybody away.
Yeah, that's what she would do. Pretty much in the same boat.
Yep.
Alrighty.
Who did make my list, and this should be a surprise to no listener, would be another one of the upcoming cards, X-23 Assassin. You know, completely aside from the fact that I'm really, really happy they did a character who is cheaper with an ability that limits them. I honestly think it captures the sort of the essence of the character. This is X-23 is someone who's very about attacking, well, doesn't want to be, but is about attacking people, is defined sort of in an offensive capability, and making it so that all she can do is attack, I think really captures that.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I think she's going to be a really interesting character, but B, I think that focus on the attack only, you know, aspect of her character is very interesting as well.
Yeah, and she was actually my number 11. In fact, she was on my list for a brief time, and I can't remember who it was that popped up to bump her off, but she was very, very close to mine. And her aggression is what seals the deal here. She can't block. She's not interested in, well, maybe she's interested in it mentally, but she just can't do it. It's not her nature as X-23. So, I'm totally with you there. All right. Then now we're at number two. And just as with number four, Evan and I are in agreement. Evan, I took number four. Why don't you start off with this one?
Okay. So number two is Gambit Card Sharp, who honestly, one of the things that sticks in my head about Gambit, and this is probably going to sound silly, is back in the early 90s, there was a X-Men beat-em-up, you know, kind of like the Double Dragon Final Fight games, where you played one of a bunch of the X-Men, you went around beating up little Sentinel robots or something, I don't remember, and various bosses. And Gambit had an attack that was like kinetic card. Maybe it was Marvel vs. Capcom.
Is this the arcade game?
Yeah.
Are you talking about the arcade game, the one with the big screen and four players?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't remember if it was both in that. It was both that or Marvel vs. Capcom, or it was only Marvel vs. Capcom, and I'm back conflating it. But he would always go kinetic card, and it's just all about him charging up and throwing those cards, and that's what Card Sharp is.
Exactly why I picked him. I think if you're talking about a game where you're beating up Sentinels, you have to be talking about that awesome, awesome arcade game. It was on a widescreen.
Oh,
you saw that all over the place. That was one of the best arcade games ever. And actually, if you are hankering for some of that action, they did port it onto the iPad. I don't know about other devices, but I know for a fact it is on iOS. So give it a look. But that's exactly why I picked him. I liked Gambit very, very early on because I thought it was cool that he just energized stuff and threw it right at people. The X-Men video game on Genesis, he did this. Of course, the X-Men 2 Clone Wars, he did this. I mean, it's his thing. And that's exactly what he does here. Perfect theme. If I went by who's my favorite, he probably would have been number one. But my number one went to somebody who I think just edges everybody out for theme. And we'll get to that.
Hey, Future Dave here. And it turns out that Gambit is not actually in that arcade game. Whoops. But it's still awesome. So if you have any fond memories of it at all or are just wondering what we're talking about, I still recommend checking it out. But yeah, no Gambit in that game. But let's be honest, he does the kinetic card thing just about everywhere.
So, yeah.
All right. My number two was Cap, Natural Leader. That's the one that just gives +1/+1 to sidekicks, rather than the Sentinel of Liberty, who does plus to attack of sidekicks and minus to plus to fielding cost of opponent's sidekicks. I felt like that kind of level of motivational stuff and the balance of it, for me, edged it out on thematic grounds, where Sentinel of Liberty gets you +2 attack, Cap Natural Leader gets you +1/+1, and I felt like since he's about boosting people up, I liked that a little more. Although I do admit that the increased purchase costs or increased fielding costs for sidekicks for your opponent is very Cap. I felt the stat bonus of Natural Leader was a little more natural.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same justification I used to put it at number nine.
You know, these were the two that I was torn the most between. And what I think edged it for me was the fact that in my mind, and what you're saying is totally valid, but I don't want you to think that it's not. What sealed the deal for me, or that I'm saying that it's not, of course, what sealed the deal for me is that inspiration only goes so far, and it's not going to give you better armor or keep you from dying or something like that. It's going to give you that push to keep going. But at the same time, I saw it from the other side where that inspiration could give you the ability to push through something you might not otherwise. You know, just like the whole concept of the mother lifting the car off of the child or something like that. So I saw it both ways, and I ended up going the other one. But definitely a good pick. So, all right. Then mine and Evan's number twos were taken care of. So we are now at number one. And what's really cool is that we have three completely different characters at number one, though Evans appeared on both mine and Katie's list. So I'll start here. My number one is Mr. Fantastic Elastic. yes, this is the super rare that we have made fun of in the past, and that's okay, because the theme here is fantastic. You may spin Mr. Fantastic down one level. Wow, no pun intended. The theme here is awesome. That's all I really mean. You may spin Mr. Fantastic down one level to allow him to block an additional character, or two levels to block two additional characters. It just makes sense. For one, Reed is very, like, defensive-minded and everything, right? He's sort of like that responsible superhero in a lot of different ways. And he stretches out. Well, as you stretch yourself out, you're going to become weaker. So he's able to absorb a lot more, but in return for him getting weaker as he does it, as represented by the spin down. So this theme doesn't just have to do with the ability, but it interacts with his die and everything else. Like, it's not just what he can do, but it's also how his die is manipulated. And that's really cool. I think the theme of Mr. Fantastic most fits with the character of just about anybody in this game, and is the most tightly ingrained into the fabric of the game and what he does within it.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely agree that Mr. Fantastic is very thematic. I didn't put him on my list, but that, you know, doesn't mean I don't agree. But I think of all the Mr. Fantastics, definitely the most thematic on that ground. And the fact that he's, you know, spin down, stretch more, is also very apt and very directly linked to Mr. Fantastic and how he most works, and his kind of, like you said, a more defensive nature of him as a character.
Absolutely.
It just makes me sad that you can't use focus power on him to have him spin down, like spin up and then down to fuck one more guy, you know, giving the extra, that last bit of oomph so he could cover just a bit more.
Yeah, it would be pretty cool.
We're sadly breaking the metaphor.
But yes.
Yeah. All right. My number one didn't appear on anyone else's list, and that was Cyclops, If Looks Could Kill. Probably people's preferred Cyclops from a meta standpoint as well. But he's the one, when he assigns to attack, he deals his attack damage to each opposing character. And I didn't think there was anything more thematic than, you know, kind of Cyclops laying, you know, zappy waste to a field even before he kind of arrives on the scene, similar to the Hawkeye Robin Hood getting first strike. Cyclops kind of being preceded by this optic blast in front of him seemed to really speak to Cyclops as a character to me.
I was close on actually a different Cyclops, which was Scott Summers, and that's where if he's blocked, you may have him deal damage to your opponent instead of his blocker or blockers. What I liked about that was that, much in the same way that it relates to how you characterize his I-beam, for lack of a better way of putting it, you know, he also has a bit of agility there. So like, oh, you're in front of me, and just cock my head to the side, and there you go, I got my opponent there too. Or instead. And no, I mean, he goes to the used pile afterwards, and I don't know that there's a thematic justification for that part, and that's why I guess he missed. I mean, game-wise, it makes sense. Thematically, yeah. I'm not entirely sure. So, yeah. Other than maybe if he's ignoring the blocker directly in front of him to hit the opponent, then the blocker's got a free shot. But beyond that, you know. But yeah, I think If Looks Could Kill, definitely you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I wound up not picking any of the Cyclopses, partially because I think I have the post Avengers versus X-Men Cyclops, who doesn't really have full control of his powers anymore, in mind. So I don't really assert, like, he does certainly lay waste to the battlefield, but there's just as many times where he just completely fails to. And I guess that kind of stuck in my mind, like, it doesn't, like, it did, even though I know he's fully been capable of doing that before, right now, just my feelings about how Cyclops works, it doesn't quite mesh, so I had trouble thinking of him working thematically in that sense. But no, he's definitely a thematic card. I'm choosing a slightly different interpretation of the character.
That's fair. It's hard for me to think anything but historically because, as everybody knows at this point, my expertise does not lie with Marvel Comics. Nothing wrong with them. I just don't know as much about them. So, cool. And our final number one here, Evan.
And this is the one that appeared on everyone's list, so we are and rather high on everyone's list. Three on Dave and five on Katie's. Yeah. So I think we can all agree that this is a very thematic card. And that would be Rogue Can't Touch This, who captures a die and then assumes the ability and stats of it. And that's really Rogue in a nutshell. She knocks out, you know, someone touches her bare skin, she drains their powers, they get knocked out, and then she has their powers. That's Rogue. You know, every time I saw the X-Men cartoon, that's what would happen. The original 90s X-Men with the synth intro and the yellow outfits.
Which is the best.
Yes.
Yes. No, that's pretty much it. It's the best one of the Rogues in terms of theme. Her Anna Raven, her common form, sort of captures that to an extent, but it just copies the stats on level one. And maybe that's just like early on in her abilities or when she doesn't exactly know what she's doing. Anna Marie, I don't know.
It's the one that steals
actions. I guess that's more like stealing the abilities of your opponent rather than the actual characters on the field, which is interesting, but I still didn't think was as in keeping as Can't Touch This. I mean, just as I thought with Deadpool Assassin being the taunt and in its simplest form, that's Deadpool, this is, in its simplest form, Rogue. This is who Rogue is and what she does. Nothing complex.
Yeah.
That's just it.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. This Rogue is very Rogue. I mean, it just really encompasses her as a character very neatly.
Yeah. That was a really fun discussion, and what really strikes me here is that I think we had 22 different characters that we talked about here, which is really, like, crazy. And when I say different characters, I don't mean just the iterations of them. Like, if we talked about if I talked about one Captain America and Katie talked about another, that's still one character. We talked about 22 different characters here, and 20 of those are in this base set. That's pretty crazy. I think that what that says is that WizKids and, of course, the designers here, Eric Lang and Michael Elliott, did a fantastic job integrating the theme with the characters in designing this game. I mean, that's at least two-thirds of them, and there were several more that I think we could have put on our lists that we didn't. I mean, War Machine, all of them, its partnership with Iron Man just makes sense, and things like that. So there are other ones out there that we didn't include that we could have. But again, like 22 different characters here, wonderful job adding the theme to the game, guys. That is a huge win, especially if you're a fan of these heroes or the comics in any form.
Yeah, and like we said, much as we bragged on the starter set last week, I really do think they put their best face forward in it, to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, I think three or four of the ones that I picked were straight out of the starter kit. You know, so it's not like you had to go far to see that they were working the theme.
No, not at all. I mean, the Iron Mans, we certainly could have put the Iron Mans on there. We didn't. Beast just missed because, to me, it's like his defensive nature, his book smartness, I think, did come across in some of those. But it just missed, actually just missed my honorable mentions, too. But, you know, the Hulk, we had a lot of stuff on there from the starter set. You're absolutely right. We really did. And, again, I think that speaks to it. One thing we still didn't have was Thor. Sorry, Thor.
Sorry, Thor.
We still don't like you that much, buddy.
Yeah, I don't think he works thematically. He's all about stopping the fisties.
I think the thing is that Mjolnir, the card, is actually more thematic for Thor than the Thor cards are.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
I think that's a big one. I feel like Mjolnir kind of stole Thor's thunder.
Oh, boo.
Womp womp.
All right. So that brings us to the end of this episode, number 17. What were your thoughts? Who do you think are the most thematic cards in this game? Let us know in the comments. Let us know wherever you want to let us know. We will be back at you in 1 week's time, where we talk about the unsung heroes of CCGs like this, which are the common cards. So once again, thanks so much for spending some time with us, and we'll see you again soon.
See you guys.
See ya.